But first, let's talk about money. It's all about money, right? You know? Some days you think so. I want to talk about cash. I want to start, though, by talking about Dave Ramsey. And yeah, that may surprise you. I'm not a huge fan of Dave Ramsey. Maybe you've heard of him. Big money guy. He talks about investing and how to manage one's finances. He's a bright fellow. He's made a lot of money doing it, too. He's also got a huge radio presence. I guess he's worth about $55 million, according to an online search I did. He's a Trump supporter, but not a blind follower of Trump. When Trump rolled out the Trump accounts, he called it, quote, a political stunt. I was surprised Trump didn't rebuke him for that. But anyway, he's, I'm lukewarm on Ramsey at best. But I love that he advises people not to use credit cards. And I love that he defends cash. And I want to share with you something sent to me. I didn't happen to catch this conversation on this program. I was probably too busy listening to Clay and Buck, Rush Limbaugh's successors. Anyway, Ramsey talks about what a cashless society would actually mean. And remember, you know, a cashless society is what the big banks want. And it's what many within the U.S. government want. I'll read you what Ramsey wrote about this. But a cashless society means fully digital, fully traceable, fully controlled. Ramsey says that those who support a cashless society aren't fully aware of what they're asking for. A cashless society means if you are struggling with your mortgage on a particular month, you can't do an odd job to get you through. Your child can't go and help the local farmer to earn a bit of summer cash. No more cash slipped into the hands of a child as a good luck charm or from their grandparent when going on holidays. And I got to add this, folks. What about Joe Biden? So Kathy and I are at a Joe Biden event back in 2019. And it's crowded. It's packed with people. I'm getting ready to ask him a question about pipelines again. And we see him slip $5 to a kid for an ice cream. There's an ice cream truck out in front. He slips the kid $5, each kid, $5 to go buy some ice cream. If in a cashless world, Joe Biden would not be able to do that. All right, so what else does Ramsey warn us about? No more money in birthday cards. No more piggy banks for your child to collect pocket money and to learn about the value of earning. No more cash for a rainy day fund or for that something special you've been putting $20 away a week for. And I would add, no more egg money. We've talked about egg money before on this program. Kathy and I, we have our egg money jar. And egg money is, in rural communities, there's a long history of egg money. And actually, there's a great song about Get Your Hands Off My Egg Money. It's that money you get from selling eggs that you keep in a special place to use at a special time, at a special moment. Well, in a cashless world, we no longer have any egg money. That may seem like a small matter, and yes, it is. Okay, what else does Ramsey remind us of? No more little jobs on the side because your wages barely cover the bills or put food on the table. No more charity collections. No more selling bits and pieces from your home that you no longer want or need for a bit of cash in return. No more cash gifts from relatives or loved ones. What a cashless society does guarantee that banks have full control of every single penny you own. They control every transaction you make. It's all recorded. All your movements and actions are traceable. Because, you know, wherever you go to use your credit card or your some kind of a electronic payment, there's a record of that. They know not only what you buy, but where you buy it, where you go. Do we really want that level of intrusion into our private lives? What else does Ramsey have to say about that? Access to your money can be blocked at the click of a button if banks need, quote, clarification from you, which will take about 3 weeks, 1,000 questions, and 5,000 passwords. Okay, he exaggerates, but we get the point. And yeah, there's nobody more frustrated by passwords. Well, I probably have a lot of company, very frustrated by password insanity. Okay, what else? So you will have no choice but to declare and be taxed on every dollar in your possession. The government will decide what you can and cannot purchase. He may be going too far on that. If your transactions are deemed in any way questionable by those who create the questions, your money will be frozen for your own good. So bottom line is cash gives you control over what you do, how you interact with the world. You know, you have independence. You have some capacity to, you know, basically act privately. And I know some of the people deriding cash say that, well, you know, cash is great if you want to embezzle money or if you're involved in some kind of drug trade or arms trade or something like that. Well, yeah, there's always going to be bad actors. I would rather take my chances with those bad actors than the bad actors on Wall Street who are absolutely already abusing their power of finance and will abuse it even greater, in even greater levels if cash gets outlawed. So, you know, Ramsey advises pay with cash and say no to a cashless society while you still have a choice. And I'll add to that, you know, there are places already in Des Moines that don't accept cash. I'm going to name one, the Beer Garden. I like the Beer Garden. It's kind of a fun place, but they don't accept cash. And you know what? I will never spend a penny there because I don't have a credit card. They would probably take my debit card, but I don't want to do that. I have the right and I want to be able to pay cash. On the flip side, I like that there are more and more businesses that are giving you a discount for cash, or restaurants in particular. You pay in cash, you get a lower price. Thank you. I thank them when they do that. Okay, so speaking of cash, who's winning the so-called cash war in the political universe? And it's mostly, sadly, it's mostly a wireless transaction war, okay? I've donated to candidates and sometimes have a hard time doing that because I don't want to go through ActBlue or whatever online platform they use. I just want to give them a check. And I understand why it's not a good idea to give a candidate cash. There should be some traceability when it comes to how politicians are funding their campaigns. I get that. That could be done with a check. Okay, so the cash war in the political universe. Interesting reports out last week about that. And if just at the surface, it looks like the money grab for federal candidates is going very well for Democrats. And yeah, they're outraising Republicans. And everyone thinks that's good. But to me, it's a clear sign that our system is totally broken. When I first got elected, the conventional wisdom was that Republicans had the money to fund their campaigns. Democrats had the shoe leather. We were willing to go out and work hard to get elected. And, that's changed now. Both Democrats and Republicans now each have tons of money. And when I first ran, by the way, 1992, I spent $6,000 with a $100 cap per donation to oust a 10-year incumbent. And for 14 years, I never took more than $100. That was always my cap. I never changed it. I didn't adjust it for inflation. I only took $100 from anybody, no more, no less. No one, well, yes, less, but no more. But yeah, you know, even more amazing, a guy named Mike Fitzgerald. I think Mike was the longest serving state treasurer in the U.S. He was Iowa's state treasurer from 82 until just recently. And on his first campaign, he told me once, he raised $6,000. 1982, $6,000 to run a statewide campaign in Iowa and win. But nowadays, again, it's just out of control. It is so out of control. And Democrats are outraising Republicans. It's interesting because if you look at the 9 battleground states for the U.S. Senate, Democrats have far outraised their Republican opponents in most of them, all but one, actually. And that's Iowa, where the Republican candidate, Ashley Hinson, has outraised, by a little bit, the Democratic candidate, Josh Turek. So again, people look at all this thing. Oh, Democrats is looking pretty good. But campaign finance laws have changed, gone from bad to worse. A candidate's fundraising for their campaign is now only one piece of that pie. Republicans have these two huge advantages. They've got these super PACs. and they've got a national party and national party committees. And because of the recent Supreme Court decision that lifted, you know, rules on how PAC money could be, you know, interchanged with individual campaigns, suddenly Republicans' financing is looking, you know, more powerful than Democrats. For example, Republicans have $380 million in the two national party super PACs. Democrats have $193 million, about half of that, but still a ton of money, right? Anyway, Republicans also have $125 million in the bank for the Republican National Committee. The Democratic equivalent, the DNC, which we'll talk about more later in the program, the DNC is $3 million in debt. So again, Republicans, $125 million, Democrats, $3 million in debt. On top of that, President Trump has a super PAC, the MAGA Inc. PAC. That has $382 million. And of course, a lot of that's coming from big donors and a lot of these corporations that are cozying up to Trump for special favors, certainly a lot in the AI industry. Yeah, and there's no Democratic equivalent to MAGA Inc. So I'll read your quote from the New York Times about this situation. The Democrats would seem to have a lot going for them this cycle. Trump is unpopular, and he's historically been a huge motivator for their voters. That's helped Democrats attract small dollar donations, but it hasn't translated to an overall fundraising advantage because Republicans are doing so well with big donors and corporations. Okay, so I would also add that Democrats have done pretty well with big donors and big corporations. But right now, and given the fact that you've got a guy in the White House who's you know, pay to play, a lot of the top dollar donations are going his way. And Democrats are bemoaning that. And my response is, and we'll talk more about this a little bit later, but, you know, it's not all about the money. There are other things that are way more important than money, and that could be your focus. I want to talk about one more thing when it comes to money, then we're going to move on. This is fascinating to me. Charitable giving. Okay, we all know about charitable giving. That's a good thing, right? Well, Robert Reich, he's the former Bill Clinton Commerce Secretary. He's also a current writer. He writes prolifically these days, probably him and his team. Says, quote, "We're on the cusp of the biggest gusher of charitable giving in history. Beware." So this is kind of complicated. I don't want to get into it in great detail, but the way our tax code works, there's a giant loophole that lets the richest people in the U.S. Take a big slice out of their tax bills so they can fund their own priorities through charitable giving. It's very complicated. I don't want to get into it in great detail. But, you know, charities includes universities, Reich points out opera houses, other cultural venues the rich like to be seen at. You know, I mean, I guess I like some of those places too. I'm not a big fan of opera houses. But bottom line is every dollar of charitable giving that the richest Americans, you know, spend, like give away, it reduces their taxes. Here's what Reich said. According to the Institute for Policy Studies, up to 74 cents of every dollar donated to charity would have been paid as taxes. So in 2022 alone, charitable giving resulted in $73 billion in lost tax revenue. So, you know, Reich reminds us that taxes finance public goods such as education, scientific research, roads and bridges, nutrition, healthcare. Yeah, they do that. Unfortunately, a lot of those things are being ignored by the current crop of D.C. politicians. And again, Democrats are part of that problem as well. And meanwhile, the president and Congress are talking about a $1.5 trillion military budget. So it's hard for me to get excited about, you know, about paying taxes, honestly. But I get it. This is a way that the wealthy have found to give money to charities that they value. You know, wealthy Republicans can give to the Heritage Foundation's Educational Fund, I suppose, or some other, quote, charitable equivalent. see their money go to support things that they benefit from instead of going to the general fund where Congress and the president decide how to allocate resources fairly. In theory, again, that's a great theory. Hard to take it too seriously when you're looking at a $1.5 trillion military budget. But the bottom line is we're basically giving them all kinds of breaks in terms of what they owe in taxes. And this is about, as Raj points out, this is about to get much, much worse because of the AI boom. He's estimating that about $100 billion a year is going to be going into charitable giving, $100 billion a year. And that's going to be coming from specifically from the AI industry, the people who are making tons of money in AI. And again, that's going to reduce what they pay in taxes significantly, in some cases completely. And, and what are we looking at here? Let's see, 4,400 new millionaires that have been created by the SpaceX program, as well as OpenAI's IPO, likely to create many more millionaires and multimillionaires. And we're talking about really big money. Anyway, I don't understand how all this stuff works really well. I'm just pointing it out that this came across my desk and I thought, this deserves some consideration, and hopefully you'll look into it more. Hopefully some of you will understand it better than I do. And, try to convince your members of Congress to do something about it. All right, I got one more thing for you here, folks. So we've seen this before where politicians will use the music of, a famous person for a shameless promotion. We've seen it many times. This one was one of the worst I've ever seen. It was the Trump White House using a Katy Perry song, Firework, in a TikTok video showing U.S. military strikes on Iranian targets. And Perry is really unhappy about it and said, quote, "I did not approve this. I was not asked, and I absolutely do not condone it. I wrote this song, Firework, to be an anthem of hope, healing, and inner strength. My music is for bringing people together, not celebrating warfare." Good for her.